to his tenure and the flip-flopping that has gone on. And I know that there is the fact that they got the rapid test, like that is good. Like, that's a great thing. And it's what a lot of these schools wanted in the first place. But I'm sure that there are academics at all of the Big Ten schools, parents and students whose voices won't be heard as loudly because it's not sports and it's not connected to the billions upon billions, that would love for there to be that same rush to get those type of supplies for everyone at the university.
Yep. And here's, when you mention the Ivies, I can't escape the truth that the Ivy League schools, when you say, well, the Big Ten says, well, the science is different now. The science is different. Not enough for the Ivies, it's not. And when you start saying, well, these other schools, look, they've got the resources to have all these tests. Do you know what the endowments of the Ivy League schools are? The lowest endowment in the Ivy League is Brown at $4.2 billion. Okay, that's the lowest. Harvard has an endowment of $40.9 billion. This is the size of the amount of resources that these schools have. If they wanted to look out for the same kind of testing and the same kind of protocols and the same kind of travel arrangements, it's still not enough because it's just not safe for them and not safe for their communities. And I like to think that the Ivy League schools and the people who run them, they have a pretty solid access to some pretty smart people, whether it's all of the medical facilities that under their own names or not. They share information pretty well at the conference level. And for them to continue to have this be an absolute non-starter, but for everybody else, well, you know, we can kind of play football, it tells us about what football means to certain communities, certain people, certain schools.
It doesn't feel great. Even with the other leagues, like baseball, I found my happy place with baseball. I found even some joy in watching the NFL, and I wasn't sure that was going to be the case. And I think the sticking point for me is the ability to collectively bargain. That's the thing. Like with the NBA, the joy is everyone's been safe. That they got it right. Same thing with the NHL. The bubbles worked, and you're going to get conclusions to those seasons. But with college football, the inability for the student athletes, put that in air quotes, to be able to speak for themselves beyond some of the megaphone type stuff that we've seen, I still find it a little troubling. And I'm having a hard time like reconciling, like seeing everyone get excited about the Big Ten coming back and all of the college games that are already being canceled. Like you've got games and teams that are not going to be able to field teams because of it. And even with all the information that we've been given, we've seen the national championship coach be like, oh yeah, well we're lucky. Like all our guys already had it. And it's like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about?
Right. And, you know, that's what I think David Haw made this point. Ed Orgeron does not look like somebody who would be able to handle a case of COVID particularly well. So for him to be flippant about it, you know, that amazes me to see so many people with obvious comorbidities who are not taking it seriously, because that's who this preys on. And that's who everybody should be thinking about. You know, it's not the young kids will probably be okay, even if 10 years from now, all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, everybody needs a lung transplant. We didn't know it was going to take 10 years for this effect to happen, because nobody has any idea how bad it's going to be or what it's going to mean. But I feel for the people who have to be in and around the stadium that otherwise wouldn't be, that are forced to put themselves in harm's way because other people can't live without football.
Yep. Well, thanks, Dan. I will talk to you tomorrow.
Indeed.
That is Dan Bernstein. He is on from 9 a.m. until noon. I am Lawrence Holmes. I'm on from noon until 2. And we got a lot of fun stuff for you. This hour is being brought to you by Innovative Wellness. Visit innovativewell.com. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
What advice would you give Alan on how to compartmentalize all of this and still play?
His situation is a little different from mine because I think Alan's making, you know, double-digit millions at this point. When I was going under mine, I was being paid less than the punter. So I was hot. When I was going through my contract negotiation, I didn't want my agent just to be, you know, my mouthpiece. I wanted to understand and hear what they wanted to say about me, too, to see if the GM would want to say some of those things to my face. So, I would go in there with my agent, Adisa, and listen to Jerry Angelo and, you know, all the crap that they were talking about most of the time. You know, one meeting, actually, I walked out and slammed the door because I was talking about getting the contract extension. They had promised it. And this is in camp. I never held out, all that stuff. I'm being paid less than the punter. Obviously, had outplayed my rookie deal. And the reason behind not getting, basically him saying that we were not coming to terms, is because he said I hadn't made a Pro Bowl yet.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
That was part of the incredible conversation that I had with Matt Forte. There's a portion of it that I want to share today that's more X's and O's, but it was great to get his perspective on the contract negotiations, and I love good Jerry Angelo stories. I have a bunch of my own, but I love to hear those stories from the players. Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. Here's what we have planned for you. We're going to get hardcore. If you are someone that loves the X and O's, that you like to learn about football, then you are going to love the next segment because Dan Durkin is going to join me and we are going to talk about what went right for the Bears, why they were able to run the ball, what's the difference between Mitch and play action, and what things can we learn from what we saw in the first game, and can the Bears take it into the second game? We're going to do that in the next segment. There's going to be some White Sox conversation before they first pitch over on the South Side against Minnesota. We're going to talk a lot about the Cubs today. I was moved by what John Lester had to say at the end of the game yesterday. It was a nice win for the Cubs. Very quietly, Cubs are 10 games over 500. Very quietly, they've got this thing in the National League Central wrapped up. And Cincinnati has found themselves back in the playoff race. I would be very happy for Nicholas Castellanos if he got the opportunity to play in the playoffs this year with the Reds. But they've kind of put the Central away. And they've helped out the White Sox, which I was hoping for. You know me. I brought it up. It's all about Predator. It's all about the dap up and Predator between these two teams this week. Because next, the Cubs will get Minnesota, and the White Sox could use a solid of get them out of the way. But the Sox got to take care of their own business against Minnesota first.
You son of a bitch.
It'll never not make me laugh. It's so great, and it's so on point. Herbie, let's why don't we go into the Lester thing? Because since we're already here, and Dan and I were talking about it, I know that long form sound bites, and this isn't very long, this is like a minute, but we don't get the opportunity. I don't know if everyone seeks this stuff out. Like, you're watching the game goes long, the Cubs end up winning. Javi Baez, what if Javi Baez is clicked on? But you don't get an opportunity necessarily to watch all of the post stuff. And I was really moved by John Lester talking about his time with the Cubs, what this last year it feels like and has been like. And he definitely wanted to get a message to the fans. So I want to allow him that opportunity.
Yeah, obviously. You know, probably the last, I don't know if I should say probably, but hopefully not the last regular season start put on the pinstripes tonight. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of things on my mind. You know, this year hasn't been easy for a lot of reasons. And I'm not sitting here saying woe's me, because there's a lot of people worse off than me, but you know, a lot of emotions coming in to this, and, you know, don't really know what to say, how to take it. A lot of uncertainties going forward. I think that's probably the most frustrating part for me. You know, going back to 14, I didn't really get to walk off the field like I wanted to at Fenway. And, you know, obviously tonight didn't quite go the way I wanted to. Have an empty stadium, not really how I envisioned, you know, possibly my last start here. So it's, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and say, woe's me, you know, but I didn't think 6 years would go this fast.
It's weird, right? Where John Lester gets here in 2015 and poof, his time with the Cubs is probably over after this season, however this season ends up for the Cubs. Well, I was talking with Dan during transition, and I'd written this down like earlier today. Like, this is a team that has a bunch of guys that I imagine that Cubs fans identify with. Is like, that guy is my guy. Like, I could understand someone embracing Chris Bryant, be like, that's my dude, or Javier Baez being like, that's my favorite player. Wilson Contreras, who I think is just got so much talent. Jason Hayward, because of the speech and the fact that he's a wonderful teammate and what he's doing this season. Kyle Schwarber for what he did in 2016. Like, there's a lot of candidates for my favorite player. And I wouldn't imagine, and I could be wrong, and if I am, feel free to text the Tech Zone, which is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. But I think that most Cub fans that I've had a conversation with have Lester in a different place. And it's the place of, he was the right guy at the right moment, and I respect the hell out of that dude. You look at his numbers throughout his career with the Cubs, and obviously when you're talking about a guy who's towards the end of his career, who's almost 37 years old, the numbers are going to fall off. But in his time here, first season, 205 innings. Second season, 203 innings. Third season, 180 innings. Fourth season, 182 innings. Fifth season, 172 innings. And obviously this season's all screwed up because it's short money. He finishes second for the Cy Young in 2016. He is an all-star twice. And even inside this season, which has had its ups and downs, and his whip is like 1,300. He still had moments when he's been an effective pitcher. I don't know if any of the World Series stuff comes together without John Lester. And I mean that from the big standpoint of, wow, the Cubs are in. Like, they're pushing their chips into the middle of the table by bringing in a big money deal like John Lester, a guy that has a resume, an incredible resume in the postseason. I would argue that he is a Hall of Famer. I know that there are some people who are on the fence about that. But you look at what he's been for the Cubs, even, in the postseason, where he's made 10 postseason starts, right? And the ERA is like 2.44. He has the incredible relief appearance in the World Series itself. I think that he's been an anchor of a staff, and it just signified different. John Lester, Joe Maddon, it signified, oh, this is legit. This is not some, we keep hearing about rebuild, we keep hearing about rebuild over and over again. This is what it looks like. It's a rebuild, and they're playing for keeps now. I've just always liked him. I've always, in every interaction, and even watching him on the diamond, but I found him to be an extremely competitive and thoughtful pitcher. And he talks about pitching in a way that I enjoy. He'll explain to you how he screwed up a pitch or why he didn't get the most out of a start. I think that he lives in the same land as Marian Hossa, where the right guy at the right time can make all the difference in the world. All the difference. You bring in someone and you're like, is the chemistry going to be correct? And with Lester, it was the chemistry and his performance. Like, he's not a mascot. He went out there and did the job. And it's easy to, even now, when you see a guy that's doing it with guts and guile. He's doing it with shadows and mirrors and all sorts of other stuff to just be competitive now. But you can appreciate it because he understands that his team right now is in a battle and they think that they can win the World Series. I don't suspect that he will get a start in the postseason unless the rotation gets a little backwards at the end of next week because the Reds win every game from here on out. But he damn sure could be a valuable piece out of that bullpen. And maybe Rossi does start him. Maybe Rossi pulls a Madden, like, can you go give us four innings and we'll figure out the rest? But I don't know if his importance can be said loudly enough. Obviously, there are other people in play, and look, you've seen the story, like, you know the lore behind the Cubs building themselves up, and you don't forget about guys like Jake Arrieta and Kyle Hendricks or Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein or Joe Madden. But John Lester was like a signal flare. Him wanting to be a Cub. And it didn't seem like a money grab. You know how sometimes, like, a free agent will sign, you'd be like, oh, this is the retirement plan. It's never felt that way. And it's another reason why he should be respected. Even in a season where he could be like, oh, I'm probably done after this. You're still getting effort. You're not getting a guy who's giving up on his starts. And I think that's incredibly admirable. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to get a little X and O-y. Dan Durkin's going to join me. We're going to break down why the Bears won and whether or not they have a chance to win against the Giants. We will do that next here on The Score.
What a time to be a Chicago sports fan. Start your day with a Score and listen all day, every day. The Bears are back.
Touchdown, Bears!
And both the Cubs and Sox are among the hottest teams in baseball. Lock it on The Score all day so you don't miss a minute of what we do best. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Andrew Bogish with a Radio.com Sports Minute. When I read that the Dodgers had clinched their eighth consecutive postseason berth, it didn't strike me as that long. Maybe I'm just used to them being there. It's no surprise that they're back this season. But then I read that eight seasons is the third longest streak in baseball history. The Braves reached October in 14 consecutive seasons, ending in 2005. The Yankees did it 13 times in a row, ending in 2007. The problem for the Dodgers, they're more like those Braves than those Yankees right now. Atlanta won a solitary title in that amazing stretch. LA is still on zero. I'll always value consistency. You can accidentally have a good season, but eight consecutive trips is no fluke. That being said, the Dodgers better validate this run with a title soon. I'm Andrew Bogish.
This segment is being brought to you by Indeed.
Dance like a dad. It's a great way to make a moment with your kids.
First, I hold my hands out like they're on a steering wheel. Then I look over my shoulder. Next, I put it in reverse. Meep, meep, meep.
Visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
180 over 111, and I had a stroke.
I couldn't speak or walk.
This is high blood pressure. Get back on your plan. Go to loweryourhbp.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk.
Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something.